Session number 20153. Dennis Smith, Reel 1.
Dennis Smith, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Wiltshire, near Calne.
Which year was this?
1924.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Calne?
No, I left that area when I was 5 years old. My father was a farm worker and he then moved into Hertfordshire.
Whereabouts?
Near Hitchin.
So is that really your hometown?
No. Having spent a few years near Hitchin, we then moved into the border of Cambridge and Essex at Crisall.
Where?
Crisall.
How do you spell it?
Crisall.
And that's in Essex, is it?
That's in Essex, yeah.
Is that where you went to school?
No, this was after I'd finished my school in Hertfordshire.
How old were you when you left school?
When I left school, I left at 14.
So that would have been in 38?
38, correct, yes.
Did you get a job on leaving school?
I did, yes.
Doing what?
I worked for a big store, a shop.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
I was. I was driving a delivery van at that time from the age of 17 to 18 for this shop.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I certainly did on the Sunday, yes, yes.
Did you have any feelings about it?
The only feelings I had was that it would all be over before I was old enough to be involved in it.
Did the war affect you at first?
It did at Crisall because as the crow flies, we were only 3/4 of a mile from the edge of Duxford Airfield. And the fighters used to take off and pass over the house where I was living.
Did you see anything of the air battles?
Oh, quite a few, yes, yes.
What can you tell me about what you saw?
Well, we saw the fighters take off. We saw them engage some, on a few occasions, the bombers that came over there. But more often than not, all the effect that we had from the war at that time was occasional bombs that were dropped and missed in the airfields. The other airfield near Duxford was the satellite airfield of Falmia, and which was very close. And so we used to get the occasional German planes over the two airfields.
Did you have any contact with the personnel at Duxford?
Very, very little, very little.
Did you see any dogfights?
Maybe we saw one or two, but they weren't very prominent, not in our memory at that time, I don't think. I don't recall it.
Did any bombs fall close to your home?
Not really close. When you're talking about 1/4 mile, 1/2 mile, that would be as near as they dropped.
Mm-hmm. Did it make you at all nervous?
No, I think at that age, it made you more excited than nervous.
Did you think the Germans would invade?
No, I don't think I had any great feeling on that. I felt confident that that we would hold out against the Germans, yeah.
Did you hear Churchill broadcast at the time?
Yes, yes.
Did they have any effect?
It was stirring. It was stirring to, I think, the age we were. It was quite stirring.
And Lord Ha Ha?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But I think to most of us, Lord Ho Ho was a joke. We couldn't take him seriously at all.
Did you join Home Guard?
I did join the Home Guard from the age of 16.
What Home Guard unit was that?
That was Crystal.
What did that consist of?
Well, it consisted of the local men, but it was a part of the Essex... I can't remember the name and number of the battalion.
Did you get any training or duties with them?
With training, with yes, with rifle firing and so on, and guard duties at night on various stations around there.
What did the training consist of?
Mostly rifle firing.
Did you have one of your own?
Yes, yes.
Were they mostly young or old?
Mostly old. Mostly old.
So how did you come to be in the forces yourself?
Well, when I was 18, before I was 18, I was 17 and three quarters. My friend who worked with me, also a delivery driver, he was a year older. He'd joined the Royal Marines, and he said how much he enjoyed it. And so, to make sure that I was able to get into the Royal Marines at the age of 17 and three quarters, I volunteered so that I didn't wait to be conscripted.
How did you go about it?
I went into the recruitment centre in Cambridge.
Was it easy to get in?
Easy, yes. Yes, quite easy.
What was the next step?
Well, the next step, waiting until I was called up and away from my training with the Royal Marines.
Where was that done?
I did the initial training at Deal.
What was it like?
But to me, enjoyable, because it's something I wanted, I think. It was the normal, what we called square bashing in those days, to knock you into shape a bit and...
How were you treated in the basic training?
Quite well, quite well.
Were you able to do what they wanted you to?
Yes, I think I was able to do because I was so keen on doing it, I believe. That was the answer to it.
And then?
And then I, because I was a driver before I joined, they wanted to be a driver in the Royal Marines. And so I was then sent to the driving school at Portsmouth to obtain the service driving licence.
Was service driving exactly the same as civilian?
On the road, yes, but there was additional training with the trucks, the lorries, and in the case of the Royal Marines, they had anti-aircraft units and it was towing anti-aircraft guns and so on.
Did you have to know how to repair them?
No, I didn't do a mechanics course, no. No, just a driver's course.
What happened next?
And then from there, I went down to Devon to do an infantry training course, which consisted of training much as an infantryman would do, and we trained on Dartmoor and so on.
How rigorous was that?
That was quite rigorous, but I'm not so sure about actually being strenuous. I think we were all fit and we had exercises on Dartmoor. I don't recall it being too strenuous.
So this is about 42, is it?
Yes, right, 42, then going on to the end of 42 into 43, yes.
Any incidents that happened to you in the training?
No. I obtained a good marksman's score in the shooting, and I suppose this dates back to the fact that I was bred and born in the country, my father on a farm, and I was brought up on a farm, and from the age of 10 or 11 I always had a gun, and of course when it came, I was so used to shooting that when it came to the qualification with the Royal Marines, I found it easy to get a marksman's badge because I could shoot well.
What kind of gun had you possessed yourself when you were a boy?
Well, two or three different types, graduating from the small air rifle into the bigger guns, yeah.
These were rifles, were they?
Rifles, yes, yeah. Two rifles, yeah.
What had you used them for?
Shooting hares and so on, and yeah.
For the pass?
Yeah.
To eat, yeah?
Yeah, so, yeah.
What happened after Devon?
Well, then, instead of moving on after doing my infantry training, we had a batch of the first naval commandos, Royal Navy commandos, came into the infantry training centre to be trained in basic fieldcraft and so on. And there was a group of us who passed as marksmen were held back instead of going on. We were held back to be a part of the training team for this Royal Navy Commandos. And as they went out on and did their exercises on Dartmoor, we were firing live ammunition over and around them to give them experience of being under fire. And I spent 3 or 4 months down there doing that, and then eventually they moved on, and we were surplus to requirements with the training team. And for some reason or other, I was then chosen to go on a signals course. And from there, then I went down to South Wales, to the Royal Marine Signals School.
What kind of signalling was this?
Every aspect of signalling. RT, WT, which is wireless telegraphy, radio telephony, cables, lamp, and everything in the whole range of signalling. And so that the first part of that was in a small place, Tracoon, which is near Fishguard. And the second stage of the course for signals was at Saundersfoot, near Tenby.
And then,
having finished signals course, I was then drafted to the landing crafter school at Towyn, up in North Wales. And after being there for a short while, I felt that I'm tending to get more of a Navy than what I really wanted to be, the Marine. And so from there, I volunteered then for commando training for Towyn.
Where did that take place?
The commando training took place at Achnacarry in Scotland, which was all the commandos were trained at Achnacarry. And
how did that compare with the previous training you'd had?
Oh, this was a lot tougher. This was tough. Yes.
In what sense?
Physically, it was tougher. It was over and above any ordinary infantryman would do.
Was there anything in that you found difficult to do?
Oh yeah, I think so. Yes, the long strenuous 20 and 30 mile marches and so on. Needed every ounce of strength you had, really, and rope climbing and so on. Yes, it was difficult, but I think when you really want to do something, then you make every effort to do it.
What condition were you in by the time you finished that?
I think I was super fit. Yes. I'm sure we all were. There were quite a few men who would like to have passed it, who made every effort to pass it, and they failed. But you feel sorry for someone when they want to do something and they just can't grind out that last ounce to do it. Yeah.
What happened after Agna Carrie?
Well, after Agna Carrie then, time was going on, and I moved then down to the commando training commando holding centre at Wrexham. And from there, the commandos were then allocated to different units. And after spending some time there, a mixture of Royal Marines and Army commandos, we then were beginning to get issued with clothing for the Far East, the Jungle Greens. And it appeared to us that they were forming a unit to go to the Far East. And we were then inoculated for cholera and beriberi and all the jungle illnesses. And then I came home on leave from there, which was embarkation leave, they said, before going to the Far East. And I came home on embarkation leave, and by this time it was early April of 44. So I came home, I told my parents that I was off to the Far East. And I went back after leave, and was then told to hand in your jungle gear, you're on draft. And I was then drafted down to 48 Commando, who were preparing for D-Day landing.
Where were they?
They were at Gravesend.
How did you feel about the switch?
I don't think it worried me. I took it all on board, I think. Yes. At least I didn't. Certainly didn't expect to get involved in D-Day, but that's how it was.
What impression did 48 Commando make on you when you got to Gravesend?
They were, to me, they were like a family, because although they were newly formed, a lot of them had served together over the years. And I felt like a complete stranger for a while, because the new boy coming into a unit that they were all used to each other, and they knew, a majority of them knew each other. And I joined the signal section, who had come home from the Middle East, and as a whole unit, they were all then switched over and went into 48 Commando. So they were used to operating together, and for a time I did feel like an outsider. And but they were a good set of lads, yes.
So what did your job involve with them?
Well, over the course of time, it involved everything. But for D-Day, it was to operate a signals lamp, an oldest lamp, which is used commonly in the Navy. This was something very unexpected, because we don't expect, as land forces, to use an oldest lamp.
Can you take me step by step through what happened to you personally in as much detail as you can recollect from Gravesend to landing in Normandy, please?
Yes, well, we We moved from Gravesend down to the concentration area near Southampton, into a camp there. There we were briefed for a couple of weeks. I met up briefly with the man who would be in charge of me, in fact, the forward officer of bombardment, and also the forward officer observation, who was a Canadian artillery officer, and his two signalmen, the two Canadians. We were a small group together.
Do you remember their names?
No, I remember the name of the forward officer bombardment, Captain Tyra, who was a Royal Artillery officer. Artillery officer. But I had very little to do with him. I seemed to be more connected with the two Canadian signalers and their officer, whose name I cannot recall. Maybe because, as a group, we all landed together. I don't know at what point after we landed I was supposed to meet up with the forward officer of bombardment, because he went ashore separately. But I did know that after getting ashore, we were to proceed close to the beach, move to the left, and call in any gunfire needed from the supporting ships. But everything went wrong from that point as we landed. I lost the two Canadian signalers as I got ashore through water, at least chest high, almost up to my throat, because our boat got stuck on an underwater obstacle and it didn't beach properly. And as soon as I hit the beach before them, made my way to the face, the wall in front, and looked back for these two comrades of the Canadian signalers who I started off with, only to see either a shell or a mortar burst right close to them, and they were both cut down. And I saw their officer following, who then carried on away to my right, and I didn't see any more of them at all. But I then made my way up, and I can recall the CO, Colonel Moulton, calling 48 this way, and we all made our way through the gap in the seawall, into the edge of the town, Saint-Aubin, and instead of being able to move along the coast as we hoped, close to the shoreline, the only way we could get along was moving inland, probably half a mile to an inner coast road, and making our way left along this road. So in effect, I was carrying a lamp for nothing, because there's no way that I was within sight of the support craft. So that ruled out me as a signaller right from the start.
So what did you do with the lamp?
I carried the lamp onto until we settled at the inshore from Langroon, where the strong point was which we were to attack. I then deposited the lamp with the rest of our own signals group there. There, and I then took up more a duty as a rifleman from then on. We set up a signal station in a courtyard with high walls round, and another signalman and myself, a corporal. I recall that because we couldn't see who might be approaching from outside, we We went into two houses, cottages, that were inside this courtyard of this big house. And I recall that him being more experienced than me, having been in action before, he led me in. I always recall that there was an old man and two ladies in this cottage, and we told them that we wanted to go upstairs, and we went upstairs and we took a bedroom window each to control the road in case the Germans came onto us. They were to our left. And to me, it's always been a joke since that within a few hours of landing, myself and my comrade were in a lady's bedroom drinking cider, only within an hour or two of landing on D-Day, which it sounds like a joke, but it was serious. It was actually a lady's bedroom I was in, and the man went down and he brought cider up for us to drink. And after consolidating this position, by this time it was late afternoon, going into the evening, and we expected a counterattack from the Germans at that point. And I spent the first part of the evening holding a position on the outskirts of this courtyard with a man who was with us, who was from ex-troop of 10 Commando, the German Commando, German Jews. Corporal Hamilton, his English name was. His proper name was Wies. And I spent 3 or 4 hours with him, talking with him and holding this position on the outskirts of our perimeter. And then during the course of the night, I was called again to escort our intelligence officer, Lieutenant Smedley, and he wanted to contact the mayor of the town to have a word with him. And so we wandered through the town. He obviously had directions where to find the mayor, and I went as his escort through the night into the town. Very quiet it was, a few flashes of light here and there. We not knowing who we might meet or if we'd meet anybody, Germans or French people. We eventually found the place. He asked me to sit inside the gate and not let anyone in through the gate whilst he went indoors. And he went, tapped the door, a few words were spoken, and he entered. Within half a minute, he was out again. And he said, "You must come inside. The mayor doesn't want you to be seen here." And so I went inside. Stayed in the hall, just inside the doorway. But I think at that time the French people thought it might only be a commando raid, and if we withdrew and they cooperated with us, they would be in danger. And that was the point of the intelligence officer explaining to the mayor that this was not a raid. We were there for good, we hoped. Yeah. And so ended that day, or that night rather. The next day, we prepared early in the morning for a German counterattack. We were still preparing. And I was sent to the outside of the wall of the courtyard, which was on the outskirts of the town,